Welcome to the ABCA's podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Brownlee. Coaches, let's talk about your new assistant, Rapsodo. With Rapsodo's products, you can track everything from how fast a pitcher throws to a batter's spin rate off the bat. Rapsodo's pro-level data gives you the power to look deeper into every athlete's skills, helping them take their game to the next level. Whether you want the basic data points or a more advanced look at a player, coaches can customize their dashboard to help identify strengths and weaknesses that the naked eye can't see. Turn the cage into a simulated field to make competition and practice more engaging. Take the guesswork out of coaching. From youth baseball to Major League Baseball, Rapsodo is used by thousands of colleges, facilities, and high schools to help their athletes train. Visit rapsodo.com/baseball to check out their lineup of game-changing technology and how you can implement them into your program. Play on. This episode is sponsored by Netting Pros. Netting professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Netting Professionals specializes in the design, fabrication, and installation of custom netting for backstops, batting cages, dugouts, BP screens, and ball carts. They also design and install digital graphic wall padding, windscreen, turf protectors, dugout benches, dugout cubbies, and more. Netting Professionals is an official partner of the ABCA and continues to provide quality products and services to many high school, college, and professional fields, facilities, and stadiums throughout the country. Netting Professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Contact them today at 844-620-2707 or info@nettingpros.com. Visit them online at www.nettingpros.com or check out Netting Pros on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn for all their latest products and projects. Make sure to let CEO Will Miner know that the ABCA sent you. Now on to the podcast. This week on the ABCA podcast is Connor State head coach Perry Keith. Keith has over 1,700 wins and 36 seasons as head coach at Connor State. Keith currently ranks first in wins among active NJCAA baseball coaches and is believed to be the youngest collegiate baseball coach to reach the 1,000-win plateau at the age of 42. Keith has guided the Cowboys to 18 bi-state East Conference championships, 8 Region 2 titles, and 6 appearances at the Division I JUCO World Series. Keith has coached 40 NJCAA All-Americans, with over 120 players drafted, and 13 former players making it to the major leagues. The Cowboys are off to a hot start in 2024 with a 29-3 record and hitting close to .400 as a team. Get your pad and pen ready because Coach Keith is a living legend and continues to evolve in his career. Coach Keith gives us a ton of great nuggets in this one. Let's welcome Perry Keith to the podcast. How are you?
I'm good. I had a heater on in here making noise. Got it turned off.
Heater? It can't be that cold there, is it?
A little cold this morning, but in the office here, it's going to get in the 70s, but it was typical Oklahoma. It was like 35-40 this morning, and yep. We played Saturday in shirt sleeves, and yesterday was 50 degrees with north wind. So,
yep. That's it.
You know the drill.
When we go to Tulsa to play ORU, like you never knew. It's you knew there was going to be some high scoring games though. The ball flies at Oral Roberts, man. It flies there. You could tell that was how they built. They always had big physical right-handed hitters. I don't know. Have you had many guys play for ORU?
Yeah, in the past and some, but yeah. We probably had more go to OU and OSU than ORU, but I had some.
Yeah, they've done a good job. I know they're struggling this year, but for them to make it to the World Series last year, that's a huge deal. With the landscape of Division I baseball, with the transfer portal and NIL, for a team like that to make it, it still shows that teams still have a chance.
Yeah, they had some guys from our conference on their team too.
They always did a good job with their junior college transfers and their bounce backs. You know, I told people that last year, you know, the transfer portal, helped a school like that, because at, you know, at Western, we'd go play them and they'd have guys working out in t-shirts and shorts. And it's like, okay, they've got to sit the year out, and then they would be dudes for them the next year, and where they don't have to sit those guys out now.
Yeah.
All right, here with Perry Keith, head coach at Connor State, 37th season, over 1,700 wins, but first in wins for active NJCAA coaches. Yeah. So, Coach Keith, thanks for jumping on with me.
Good. I think that bio is probably, 39 years. I'm in my 39th year.
Well, you got to tell your SID.
So pass by in a hurry.
And you guys are off to another good start. I mean, you're 26-4, unless it hasn't been updated here, you know, just on your website. You guys are 26-4 right now, so you're off to another good start.
Yeah, we are. We got a good club. We're solid. We can hit and run. Got a little power. We run a little bit. We play really good defense. And our starting pitch has been good. Our bullpen, we throw strikes. And one thing we haven't done, we don't beat ourselves. So it's been a good, easy group to coach. They take care of their stuff. Been fun.
Well, you guys are almost hitting .400 as a team.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's hard to do.
Yeah, it is. And you know, we've had a little hiccups along the way. Last Friday, we couldn't score all of a sudden. And I was kind of proud. I seen some frustration with our hitters. We played at Seminole Friday, opened up a 3-game series, and we left guys on base and just couldn't get anything going. And for the first time all year, and you know, you always talk about adversity and how you're going to handle it. You never know till it happens. And we got off the bus, and getting on the bus coming home, you could see, though, they were frustrated, seeing guys running down the line, grinding out, frustrated. And so, hey, we've talked about this, and I was really proud how they bounced back Saturday, and we swept and scored runs. And, you know, it's baseball. It's not if, it's when all of a sudden you can't score, you know. And there's no explanation. It's baseball. And just have to handle it.
As a coach, when you know that, is that just you kind of stay steady through that? Because you know you're going to come back. Obviously, those numbers prove out that at some point the law of averages is they're going to come back. Do you just try to stay patient with that?
Yeah, and you try to, you know, we talk and spend a lot of time about mental stuff in the fall. We have meetings, everything we call champions class that we've done for years. And it's about, I'm big on visualization and just imagery and relaxing. You know, I think Ken Ravizza, the book he wrote, maybe is the best thing in the world for baseball players. And we use a lot of stuff out of that. But you talk about how you're going to handle that. But you can talk about it all day until you think that you're invincible to play, and then all of a sudden you go about 0-15 and like, well, different doing it and talking about it. So, you know, and one thing I've always told people, baseball is a little different gig. I don't think you can coach or officiate this game very good if you've never failed at it. And all of us have played and fell flat on our face millions of times. If you got the right kids, and I just like, guys, but we've all been through it, and sometimes it's inopportune times. We had a good run last year, and all of a sudden we got in the playoffs and couldn't score one game. And you just hope that's when it doesn't happen. And again, if you could figure out the reason and fix that, we'd all have it made, but you can't. So
when did you start your champions class? When did you start that?
I've probably been doing 25 or 30 years. Yeah.
Who nudged you to do that? Did you read Heads Up Baseball and then like?
Oh, yeah. And I tell you what we did.
Yep.
We have bought books. Years ago, I bought the paperback version, about 40 or 50 of them. And we check them in and out with our players, and we use them. And we do other things off that, but the book is still extant. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to hear him speak years ago at an ABCA convention years ago. And man, it was like, and the guy gets it because it's not hocus pocus. He talks about the mental deal, but over and over, he always said, this doesn't replace hard work.
And Harvey Dorfman was where I started. I started as a player in high school with Harvey Dorfman's mental ABCs. And that's my only like disappointment. He was older at that time. And so he was kind of on his way out, where I wish we would have been able to get him to speak at an ABCA convention, because he was kind of the godfather, because he was starting before Revisa was, because he was working with Tony La Russa with the Oakland Athletics for a long time. That's another really good book, is the Mental Toughness Training for Baseball Players is a really good book, because the Keel brothers were working with Dorfman and the Athletics in their mental skills. The Athletics were doing mental skills stuff in the 80s, way before anybody else was doing it.
Yeah, it's good
stuff. And there's a reason Tony La Russa won as many games as he did as a manager.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, we morph life skills into it. We talk about, you know, the big thing with me is what kind of father you're going to be, what kind of husband you're going to be. And I break it down to guys like, hey, you're going to be one of those guys that's got a pickup with a lift kit on it and big rims and a bass boat and you're upside down on payments and your little girl needs braces. You know, you're selfish. You know, what are you going to do when you come home one day and you think you got money to make it to the end of the month and wife says the air conditioner's out? You know, you suck it up. And we talk about Vietnam. We talk about D-Day. And we morph that into with baseball, you know, which.
I saw the press release when the field got named after you. And that was one of the quotes that stuck out from the Board of Regents, talking about how you do such a good job of building men and raising men just as much as the wins.
Yeah. I think, you know, I've had 14 big leaguers, and you sit back and think about that, like, that's nuts. And we've had two guys be on World Series championship teams, back-to-back years. I was in St. Louis in 06 when the Cardinals won, John Rodriguez, and I was in Denver when Julio Lugo and the Red Sox won, beat the Rockies. And it's, you know, our coaches are, we're too dumb to smell the roses. It's always on to the next one. But the thing I'm most proud of, you know, I have hundreds upon hundreds of major league men and husbands out there that keep perpetuating in our program. And that's what I'm most proud of.
Do you feel like that's the key to longevity in coaching is focusing on that piece of building the person first? Do you think that keeps you away from some of the stresses that you have to deal with as a coach?
Yeah, it's all culture. You know, you got to have a culture and something you believe in and make sure your kids believe it, because you want to stay off the roller coaster, you know, up one day and down the next. And so, you know, as I tell people, the fall is a little bit like a rodeo boot camp deal, man. It's just nuts, guys, especially the junior college. You get all these new guys and coming in and being on time, you know, just all the little things. It's just constant. And you feel like you're constantly bitching and griping at guys over just little stuff. And then you kind of at some point in your career go, you know what? These guys, they don't get it. I'm spending all my time bitching at these four or five guys. I need to be praising these 20 or 25 guys for what wonderful young men they are. And sometimes we forget that. And I think probably 10, 15 years ago, that kind of dawned on me, you know. And when you get to this point in the spring, a coach's job to me in college is to take care and uplift and pick everybody up. You know, I think in the fall you're beating the hell out of them, you know, mentally and everything. But now I need to rest them, support them, lift them up through hard times. Because, you know, this stuff's not easy for anybody. You know, people think it is. There's failure and fatigue and the whole nine yards. So, yeah, it's building a culture is the thing that makes it more stressful.
Well, kids are smart, too. So do you feel like that kind of eliminates some of the issues, too? Because if I'm a player, if I'm one of those 30 players – and I see coach paying attention to the guys that are doing things right, if I want to put myself in that position, then I'm gonna gravitate towards starting to do things right. And there's obviously going to be some kids that don't get it, and those ones don't need to be there anymore. Addition by subtraction. You know, that's my dad used to talk about addition by subtraction a lot.
Exactly.
I think kids are smart. I don't think we give kids enough credit where if they see, hey, coach is paying attention and spending time with the guys that are doing everything right, I need to jump in that camp, and that kind of alleviates some of those headaches.
Yeah, you're right. And you know, people, there's still a lot of wonderful young men. I could sit here and tell you stories day after day about what guys have done here for other people and each other. And I think the other thing, we have such a melting pot. You know, we've got kids from Canada. We've got kids from Latin America. We've got kids from Oklahoma, from Midwest. We've got kids that family has money. We've got kids that can't rub two nickels together, and they don't care. They don't care. They don't care what color they are. That's I always tell people, if the rest of the world would get on our bus one time.
I've said that if you want people to fix things, get baseball people involved with trying to fix what we
get on our bus, man. And nothing's sacred. Everybody's going to get whacked, but everybody takes care of each other. And, you know, my first year, you know, obviously playing in college, I seen it, but my first year, I never forget the head coach. I walked on the bus one night and just looked back there, you know, what a menagerie of people. And I thought, man, this is something. And I'm hooked on that. I just, you know, kids, we have kids here. Some of our kids from Latin America are just so thankful for everything. And I laugh and I tell people, they think our cafeteria is the Golden Corral, you know, and that's wonderful.
Yeah. And that, you know, that's good for your kids that come from wealthier backgrounds too, to see that, hey, you know, as they say it, first world problems, those first world problems, when you see somebody that actually has third world problems, that gives you a little bit different perspective on things.
You're exactly. I see it every day.
At what point did you say, hey, Connors is where I'm going to be?
Well, you know, I started here. I played here. Then I went to Missouri State, played, and I graduated from there in 83, played for Coach Rowe.
And then
Keith Gutton, I was a senior on his first team. And then I came back here as an assistant one year, and the guy who I played for here left, took another job. And, man, I hit the ground running, and here we went. And, you know, I started getting some job offers. And I'm telling you, Gary Ward and Tom Holliday, I still talk to those guys. They did so much for me. And I sent them a lot of players. I'm telling you, and Coach Seymour at OU, they were so good to me. But
that's the first thing that sticks out when you look at your website is the Oklahoma State uniform.
Yeah, we have the same. But we, I started getting some job offers and some assistants and just this and that, and then some head jobs. And the summer of 96, I flew to a place and come home, and my wife and kids went up to my parents' house. So my wife came and picked me up and went back to my parents' house where the kids were. They live about an hour away. And I told my dad, and my dad kind of stayed out of my career. He was just a smart guy, but stayed out of my career. And I told him that night, I said, I think I'm going to take that job. And he looked at me and he goes, that would be the dumbest thing you've ever done. And I'm kind of getting most, my dad, we lost him in 2016, but it crushed me for my dad to say, why would you say that? And he pointed at my two kids. I have a daughter and a son. My daughter was probably 9 at the time. And I think my son was probably 4 or 5. And they were there on the floor. One was asleep. I can remember, like, Jersey pointed at them and he goes, you drag them everywhere you go. You put them on the bus with you. You take them everywhere you go with you. And my wife and them and they get on the bus and travel with us. And he said, you won't be able to do that there. And he was right. And, you know, I didn't take the job. And God's blessed me. This is where I need to be. And junior college baseball is wonderful. It's grassroots baseball. And I've been blessed. I love this school. We got a good president. Dr. Ramming's a wonderful guy. I can truly say he's a friend of mine. It's just, Warner's a little small town. People come here and go, holy cow. But once you get here, this is a great place. And I've been blessed with health. So I've stayed here. And a lot of people say, how in the hell did you stay in Warner, Oklahoma all the years?
And I'm winning, like, makes it easier too. Though.
And I'm like, won a lot of how games. In the heck have I been so blessed?
You've won a lot of games.
Yeah.
A lot of games. Yeah. And your son's coaching with you now?
Yeah, he sure is. He was an All-American here, then went to Southern Arkansas and played for them. You know, Justin Pettigrew played for me. He was at Southern Ark. And then he came back, and he's a director of housing here. And he's one of our assistants, him and then other other one is Jackson Field, who also played for me. And been blessed with a good staff. They pick, I tease them all the time now, you know, they pick on me because I'm old and don't know this or that. So we have ageism issues sometimes, is what I tell them. But it's fun. Like I said, when you got good players and good kids, you know, how you know, my dad was a union worker, you know, worked the same job 42 years, made a good living, but he worked, you know. Here I'm coaching baseball and getting paid. I'm blessed.
That's also seeing by example, too, that see what your dad has done for a living forever, and you're like, okay, yeah. I don't want to do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I never heard him complain or anything, so, yeah.
I mean, not growing up around coaches, I grew up around them, so, like, I kind of saw that. Who inspired you to look towards coaching as a service?
You know, kind of my dad. He was involved in athletics, my dad, and then I just – as I started playing sports, I was a three-sport athlete in high school. Some of my favorite people were coaches, you know, just learning from them. And, you know, time I got to Missouri State, I knew this is what I wanted to do. And the guy told me, hey, I got a job for you. And like I said, I graduated in May and went to work here in June that year. And, you know,
so
and
did you lean on Coach Rowe and Coach Gutton then when you got the job as the head coach? Did you lean on those guys?
Oh,
you
of
talk
course.
About Gary Ward too. I mean, obviously,
yeah,
Gary Ward
of course.
Close.
You know, I remember Coach
Rowe. Ward's a good one to be close to, and Coach Gutton's close too. Those are two really good ones.
You know,
be close
we
by.
Still use a lot of stuff here that we did at Missouri State. I have.
I think defense. About offensive teams because I, when I was at Evansville, Missouri State, we were in the same league together, and those teams always hit. They always hit.
Yeah. Yeah, I use a lot of the same stuff, still do. And I remember when I got this job, Coach Rowe told me, he said, Perry, surround yourself with good people. Pretty simple and good advice.
How has the landscape of junior college baseball changed over the years for you? I mean, the draft shortened now. Portal, NIL, there's a lot of other stuff outside of your guys' control that you're having to deal with.
Yeah, there's two things I see. I think it's more difficult for used to guys were beating the door down here. I didn't have to get on the phone to get guys out of here. Guys were beating the door down. I have to do that now. I don't have, I do. We do have more proactive, I guess would be the word, calling because of the portal and I guess, and all that stuff. So that's changed a little bit, just getting guys placed. Good players that I've had in the past that I think are probably good enough to play in the Big 12 or SEC or, you know, kind of getting looked over. And they're going to places, but that's different. The other thing I've seen, and I think it's probably because of the draft and the draft and follow, and maybe social media. I see more and more kids that don't need to go to a Division I school that I used to could come in and go head up with a Division I Power 5 school and say, look, you know, here's not only the thing, playing time, but practice time. You know, we get in here in August and we're still going in November. You know how important that is for a freshman opposed to what they're so limited. But those kids, most of them, that goes right over their head. So that's changed.
Yeah, they view it different now. They just view that.
And I think social media's got something to do. And that early commit
deal. Has a
lot
to do with it.
That early commit deal to me is nuts. You know. We had Jeff Salazar here. He's been a big league hitting coach. Now he's in the Dodgers organization. He played in the big leagues for a while. And he went on to Oklahoma State and played for Tom when Tom was there and got drafted. He got drafted out of here. I signed him June after his senior year. I had a guy call me, and I tell you how good I thought he was. This is nuts. And I tell this, and we laugh about it all the time. I had, you know, I saw him, a little skinny left-handed hitter, could run a little bit. And I thought, you know, he might. And I called him, and he finally said, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. Well, back then, you know, the letter of intents were just paper. You'd fax them or take them to him, and how important he was. I went to Arkansas that day to go see some kid, and I sent my wife and Corey, my son, went to Putnam City, which is 2 hours from here, to take him his Letterman tent. Corey's like 6 or 7 years old. Sherry sat in the car. Corey ran the Letterman tent up to in his house. He signed it and brought it back. That's how important he was. He played in the big leagues.
Sherry sounds like she's a heck of a recruiting coordinator.
I know. So I'm like, you never know. And, you know, here's a guy like that hanging around in June. That was probably in July after he'd graduated. You know, those days are for long.
Well,
gone.
How many of those, you know, you've had so many guys sign. You've had so many big leaguers. How many of those guys were late bloomers?
Exactly. Exactly. There's tons of them. We got guys on our team right now. And, you know, that's like pitching, all this velocity stuff. I'm still out trying to find that 80 to 85 mile an hour guy that's got frame and can spin it and pitch. When those guys pop, man, you've got something. You know, they couldn't throw the ball by people growing up.
I get out in the spring a little bit here early just to see. We got so much good baseball here in North Carolina. But I saw a Northwestern's Friday guy is an 83 tops left-hander, but the changeup is plus. He had Duke baffled. Yeah, and Duke's having a heck of a season. He had Duke baffled. And it just showed you, like, if you have some deception, that 83 played up to about 90 because the changeup was so good. There's still some value for guys that can pitch.
Yeah. You know, Jordan Romano was here. And bless his heart, he was the hardest worker. And, you know, he took his lumps in the minors. There was times that he couldn't pitch here for us. And he would just be so frustrated. I'd say, Jordan, your better days are ahead. And that same year, we had a kid, a little left-hander, was about 5'9", through 80, 81 miles an hour, and he was 10-0, you know, because he could throw that breaking ball at midnight. You know, it didn't matter. And by the fifth, sixth inning, you'd think that guy was throwing 100, you know. And Jordan, he just kept hanging in there, and you knew his best days were – and he went on to ORU, and still, you know, heck – he got passed back and forth 2 or 3 times before he – and now look at him. So,
can you create work ethic for players?
Pardon me?
Can you create work ethic for players?
I think you can teach them how to work. You know, some kids work hard, but they don't know what the heck they're working on, you know, the wrong stuff. But, you know, in this game, to me, if you don't – I think you can create culture and how to work. And, well, what's that deal, you know? I'm kind of – You got that rule. You got 20% are already there, and you got 30 that ain't ever going. And then the one straddling the fence, you can then. But, you know, a lot of kids work hard, and they don't know how to work or how to practice to get better. And I'm a no-frills guy. I'm a fundamentalist. Nothing fancy. And that's what I tell guys. Stuff we do is purposeful. I'm not into busy work. Let's do stuff purposeful and – boring to do the same stuff every day, because it's you got one chance when it's time to put it in play. You got one chance when a ball's hit to you. You got one chance to execute a breaking ball. What are you doing leading up to that? That's everything. Better be, when you're in the weight room, it better be, what am I doing to make myself a better baseball player? You know, that's kind of what, like I said, I'm a simpleton when it comes to that stuff.
You start in the classroom first every day?
No, we talk. We talk before, but we go to the field and start doing early work. But, we talk about what we're going to do every day and the purpose of it. We sure do. And we spend time in the classroom at night during champions class and stuff. In the fall, we'll meet 3 or 4 nights a week.
How much is spent on time management with them? You talk about working smarter, not harder.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right. Just doing that and managing everything in your life. And we meet, I've created a monster. We meet in the dorm lounge or in a hotel in a lounge, but we have a home game, road game. We meet every night before game, about 15, 20 minutes. And we talk about visualization, relaxation and stuff. You kind of create a monster doing that. And you'd be at home and it's 9:30 at night and right here to the dorm to meet. But I think that's good for kids, because thing that I don't like is roller coaster stuff. You're playing against the game, whether you're playing the Yankees or the Bad News Bears. That's kind of what I preach to these guys. We want to be on an even keel, and you try to get that same mindset to lead into playoffs where you're not,
Visualization helps with that to stay.
That's great.
Do you script out the visualization for them?
Yeah, I go through it. I walk them through it.
Love it.
We go the whole nine yards. I walk them
through
it.
How long does it take your script when you're walking them through it? How long?
My meeting's probably 15 to 20 minutes.
Well, game. You got to get in there. I think that's the thing for somebody that hasn't done it or hasn't coached somebody to do it. There's a process to get in there. It takes some time. So it is going to be 10 to 15 because it's going to take them a little time to get in there.
Yeah, we got to go through the whole.
They've got to get that.
We go through the whole breathing deal.
Calm down.
We get them the breathing, talking about the breathing. Then we go through, not to kind of have the hitters doing stuff and the pitchers at the same time. And I walk the pitchers through fastballs, out of winds up, stretch, curveballs, wipe out curveballs, change. Then we go to defensive stuff. Like I said, people don't, you know, if you're going to be good at this, you have to invest.
You have to.
And some people want to do this. They don't want to invest the time. And I tell people all the time, they don't want to hear, man, you've done this. There's a price to pay. You know, there is. I mean, I've missed out on stuff, and I'm blessed with a wonderful family that's understanding, and they're invested in this place, and my wife, you know, hey, good Lord, you know, somebody to never worry about when you're getting home, you know, and that's
there has to be a lot of trust there.
Yeah.
For longevity, you know, of family.
Yeah.
In our profession, there has to be trust between the husband and the wife, because you're just not, if you want to be good, you're just not going to be there sometimes.
I mean, there's just such an investment. Like I said, it comes with a price.
I'm sure your kids have enjoyed every minute of it. You talk about being on the bus, like somebody that lived
there. And now I've got my grandkids out there.
Memories of being on the bus when I was a kid. Still some of the best.
No, it's, and I tell you the other thing that is done for my kids. They've seen successful people. They've also seen people that had ability that drove it in the ditch. And so they were able to make choices and see. And that was great for my kids. And now my grandkids are experiencing it. So that's
how do you handle those conversations? Because you've done this forever. You have a player who's got all the talent in the world, but you can see where that path is heading. Because, you know, that age group of kids, they're not always going to listen to it until it completely falls off the rails for some of them.
Yeah.
How do you have that conversation with the player? It's like, hey, this is where I see you heading, and it's not going to end up in a good place.
Well, I'm pretty straightforward and pretty crass and don't mince words. And I think kids in the end appreciate that. I don't hold grudges, but I will lay into them, and then it's over. But, yeah, I'm pretty straightforward, and I believe in second chances. I believe in third chances. You know, sometimes the easy thing to do is get rid of people. You know, but at a point, you know, you become a distraction. You don't care. You're dragging the other 25 down, or embarrassing the program. You know, enough's enough, and so. But
how do you circle back with them? I have a good group chat with some coaches, and they deal with this, especially the high school guys. They deal with this a lot with kids that you're trying to coach them, and they don't always handle the tone well. How do you circle back with them? Like, hey, listen, my dad said it a lot. Listen to the content, not the tone.
Yeah.
Because my dad was going to get into you. He would. And he would always circle back and be like, hey, listen to what I'm saying, not how loud I'm saying it. Because I think that's the biggest difference with this generation of kids. I have a 21-year-old and 18-year-old. I think they take the tone personally sometimes, and it's not personal. Listen to what I'm saying, not how I'm saying it.
No, it's definitely different. And, you know, all kids are different. Some kids, you can bring them in one-on-one and get a lot out of them. And then I've had some guys, the best way to deal with them is just embarrass them in front of their peers. You know, they don't like that. So whether it's going to class or what, you know, some kids, you bring them in the office and bust them about it. And like I said, I think the other thing you need to do, you need to praise them. I think you can do a lot with kids if they know you truly care and love them, and you praise them too. And I think that's, a lot of times you forget that. And that's, like I said, I think it's probably the best thing that's happened, improvement I've done in the last 15 or 20 years is like, you know, just like I said a while ago, I'm sitting here griping at this guy, and these other 20, they're taking care of their business. They didn't even want to hear that. Like, why the hell I got to hear that? Get rid of the dumbass, you know? I'm sure they're thinking that. I thought it when I played. So I try to spend more time with those guys, man.
I know, but if your heart's in the right place as a coach too, you want to try to help those ones that exactly. need help too. You're trying to help yeah. everybody. And I think that's where it gets frustrating too as a yeah. coach is like, you know what you're trying to pull out of them.
Yeah.
And it gets frustrating as a coach because you see the potential that they have as a person and as a player, and you're trying to get them that out of them. So you do yeah. want to try to help them, but you've got that way more figured out than I ever did. The amount of games that you've won.
I've got a young man he's not a young man anymore, that played for me from New York. When Mel Zitter was going with the Youth Service League, I used to get Coach Ward hooked me up with him, and man, Mel would send guys. And I had a young man from New York, and he was a good kid. He was just never been to college, and it was just, you know, the first fall was just back and forth and just. And I know there's a few times he would just walk off and duck his head. I know he was probably just going to kill me. Well, he signed with the Yankees, played a little while in pro ball. Now he's back in New York and helps in the academy, does stuff at a school and doing wonderful. Great, great young man. Well, he's always calling me about guys, and he send guys to me, and he'll say, I got to check this guy out. You know, I don't know. And a lot of times I'm like,
you need to look yourself ready? In the mirror.
And I will say that to him. He goes, Coach, I don't want you to have to deal with people like me. And I go, Freddie, man, you're a great story. He goes, I know, but I go, just stop. You know, that.
Because it takes a special coach to be able to do that. Like, yeah. You know, and I coached two kids from New York at Western Illinois. They were two of my hardest ones. They ended up being good, but they yeah. were two of my most difficult ones because they'd never been out of the city before.
Yeah. And
everybody talks about New York City as being this tough place, but it's very enclosed there. And so they're in a bubble in New York City where you get outside of that. It's a different part yeah. of the world outside of there. Yeah. Chicago yeah. and New York City, those were my good players, but toughest parts because they're kind of insulated in a city bubble there where they don't yeah. realize how the world actually works outside those two places.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a good laugh at that, Freddie. Come on, man. I couldn't be prouder of you. So. That's good.
How often are you guys lifting?
We, in the fall, when we do what we call in season and off season. And, obviously I guess that's kind of a no brainer, but when we get them in here in the fall, we go 3 days a week. And then also we have our hitters. They hit four times a week on their own. We have a sign in sheet, you know, if you're going to be worth a damn at this, you better be hitting on your own 5 or 6 times a week. But we have that. And then,
hitting, you give them a checklist of what they got to do, or you just give them
I show them stuff to work on and different things and they can kind of do on their own.
On that, it's like you got to get this amount of reps of doing this,
yeah, yeah. And then I just kind of leave a lot of them, I'll show them things. Hey, again, back to purposeful stuff. And then about the middle of October, we're still out practicing. Then Corey takes them and really starts pounding them with the lifting, and we go 4 days a week, sometimes 5 and stuff. We do that all the way through till we go home. They come back in January and start hitting, and then we kick back into our 3 day a week. We go the 3 day a week, and then we have a pitcher set up on a program, obviously, when they're going to throw and lifting and stuff. And I'm so old school. I still
they
use
lift
the
game day. You got pitchers lifting
me?
You have pitchers lift game day.
Well, they'll lift afterwards, the ones that want to. We don't have any do lift. Now, some, you know, I'm a little bit – I trust guys a little bit, the ones – and I tell people, hey, everybody's different when it comes to lifting in season, and I'm not a cookie-cutter guy. Now, that helps the guys that are driven, kills the guys that are lazy. But I kind of back off a little bit on the lifting. I believe in it. And
I think they
lifting.
Know what they need. Obviously, you said it. Every kid's different. They know what they need way more than prescribing what they need.
We got off the bus at 10:15 last night at the field, and there was a trail to the weight room.
Yes. And I love lifting after games. I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and that's
– and I know the strength and conditioning community, you know, I understand where they're coming from, but yeah. – Every kid is built different, and you can't sit there and tell me that if a kid feels better doing it that way, no matter what the science says or rest and recovery and that, if they feel better, they're going to play better, regardless of what it looks like.
And the thing I do with our hitters, the old school and me, and you probably get a laugh if you came here, and this is old minor league stuff. I'm a PVC pipe guy. We got a whole bunch of pieces of 2 foot, 2 inch PVC pipe.
It works.
And we're spinning those things every day after practice. You can burn their hands and wrist up. And I tell you one thing I read years ago.
Those small muscle groups, like that there is science to that part. With those small muscle groups, it takes them less time to recover, so you could bang them every day.
I smoke them every day after practice. It takes 2.5-3 minutes to stop. But I think
that's why we're running into some more elbow issues too now with pitchers, is because I don't think they're crushing their forearms and hands like they used
probably
to.
Probably so. And I tell you something that I read a long time ago, and it's even in Ken's book. Davey Johnson talked about when he got traded to the Braves from the Orioles. Hank Aaron was nuts after games, wrists and forearms. And Davey Johnson said he was getting ready to leave the clubhouse. He goes, "Where are you going?" And Dusty Baker talks about it. It was a rookie, and Hank took him under his wing, and they said Hank would kill them after games. So Davey Johnson said, he'd make my wrist and forearms hurt so bad, I was in tears. He said Hank could be smoking a cigarette working on it.
I had teammates that wouldn't work out with me because I was on my own plan. So I was on a 6-day-a-week plan, and I'd have some teammates that would come in with me in the weight room, and they lasted a couple sessions, and they wouldn't come in with me anymore. But I needed to do that for myself personally. Yeah. Just,
well, you know, there's a lot of big
leaders. There's a mentality to it. Like, I just think it builds mentality, too.
I've spent a lot of, you know, with guys I had in the big leagues, and Julio Lugo was one that there's times we'd be there and whole family, we'd go eat after the game. He said, "Coach, I got to lift tonight." Okay. You know, I think that helps hitters. I've seen it, and you know, I don't have any proof, but you know, we always hit and guys get stronger here, and guys, you know, and you're not talking, guy that has power, but still all of a sudden those guys are getting balls in the gap and balls jumping off their bat better. And yeah, hand strength is, we do that every day.
Any team building stuff you do in the fall with them outside the classroom?
Well,
or you just build it in the classroom?
That, and I tell you the thing that we do that builds character real quick. And you know, we're at a junior college. Probably the only thing that I would do different, if all of a sudden I just walked in another room and there was a budget and there was money just flowing everywhere, you know, I don't make any bones about it. We're in the Bush Leagues here, you know, we're scratching and clawing. But one blessing that we've had is we go and work Oklahoma University and Oklahoma State University football games. And we make a lot of money. But if it's an 11 o'clock game in Norman, we leave Warner at 4 a.m. We go on the clock at 6:30 and then drag home. Well, there's team building.
A lot of Iowa junior colleges do that too. They do that with Iowa State and Iowa football games. A lot of the Iowa junior colleges do that too.
There's team building in that because you have to deal with BS and you're all miserable together. Yep. And I go, one thing that I think is important as a coach, I see this with a lot of people. I get so, you know, with my staff, we don't have any egos. Like, assistants do this and that. We got stuff we do. Them guys take care of me, you know, my God. But I go, I'm not going to ask my guys to do anything I'm too good to do. And you see, I think that's one thing
helped concession stand because we had to do concessions at Western Illinois. I ran the concession stand.
Yeah.
And my sisters were like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, I can't ask them to do something that I'm not willing to do myself. It just sends a bad
they
message.
They see it and they know it. So that's good team building stuff. And then like I said, the champions class, and we do a lot of stuff in the community, you know. And it's one thing about being here in Warner, Oklahoma, we're all in the same dorm. Everybody's on top of each other. We're together every day. So, but you know, that we, In 2019, you know, they did some stuff on that. We turfed our infield, and we raised the money to do that.
We turfed
our infield for $125,000.
Can't do that anymore.
Because we had people in the community doing stuff. And if we hadn't done those football games, we'd have never got that done. And, you know, we didn't play a home game. We thought we was going to have it done. It started raining. We played on the road and went to the World Series that year. But it was a neat story, and it's well worth it. But, yeah, if I ever had a turnkey job done on my field, I don't know what I would do, you know, or it's set back.
Any other favorite books for you?
I like to read all kinds of stuff, but you kind of caught me off guard there.
What's your favorite genre? I mean, of book. If you're going to pick up a book, what's your favorite genre?
I like biographies. Okay. I like to read about successful people, whether in sports or other things. I don't like reading novels. I want something that's true. I've always been fascinated by successful people. I like to hear people talk, but you know,
their mentality is different.
Like, yeah, just saying,
there's
successful,
common threads among successful people is that they're wired different than average people.
So I like that stuff. And like I said, I've been fortunate to be around a lot of good people. And like I said, I still use stuff from Keith Gutton and Coach Rowe and Coach Ward and them and Tom. Me and Tom still talk. Coach Ward, I talk to him off and on still, and he's back in Stillwater.
How much of hitting is timing?
Oh, no question. That and plate and at bat management.
But
I'm a big strike zone guy.
For me, timing and plate management are very similar concepts, because if you're on time, you're going to manage the strike zone better as a hitter.
Yeah, people come in here, I have a lot of high school guys and other college guys, goes, your team's always hit. And I go, well, I always have good players. That makes it a hell of a lot easier. But then the other thing I said, you come in here in the fall and our guys are going backwards a little bit because I browbeat them a little bit about strike zone. And then all of a sudden, you know what that does? And they're hesitant and they're thinking. And they go backwards. But then when they figure it out, here they come. Because I don't think you're not going to hit the Friday night guys with a bad strike zone. You know, that's not a real profound statement, but kids don't know that. And so managing your bats, that's a big thing, like timing, because it obviously pitching, and that's what pitchers have lost now. They don't understand pitching's destroying timing. Yep. Location is destroying timing. But, I really beat these guys over the head about their strike zone. And I'm kind of a oxymoron, I guess. I want guys to be aggressive but take walks. I'm like, what the hell? That don't add up. But it does.
It does. Yeah. It does.
Be aggressive but take walks. Walks win too, you know.
Be aggressive in the zone.
So
and I think that's when the elite hitters really start to figure out how to shrink their zone. That's where they do damage, because they're in a smaller hitting area than the guys that are up there just whacking away. So you're not going to do as much damage because you're swinging at everything, where if you center into a smaller area to hit from, you're going to be on time a lot more in those smaller areas than you are in a wide area. And even with two strikes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm big on that. I'm old school. Let's not strike out and have an approach. We still bunt a lot. I've always used bunt as a weapon, you know, like we're going to put pressure on people and we
bunt.
Teams
don't have to handle it as much either. Like the teams that still do it, East Carolina is a good example of a team that really bunts and bunts well. Defenses don't handle it as well.
No, we work on that every day, and it's a tool. It's not just can't. And we've always done that. We've bunted and, you know, put pressure on people and
I'm doing bunting progressions right now. I do camp with little guys, so the 8 to 12 year olds, we're doing bunt progressions for the 1 hour a week. And next week when I do spring training camp and that camp, we'll do bunt progressions. It's not hard to teach kids how to bunt. The bunt progressions are very simple. Now, there's some nerves with it with the little guys, but they just got to get over that part of it.
You know, button off a pitch machine is a good way to do it. But I still do the stopwatch drill, where we put three guys in a group and we rotate them, and pitchers are catching and shagging around. And we'll have groups all over the infield. again, you can do that in about 10 minutes. We do that before BP a lot, just a couple times a week.
Still.
Just to know. And one thing that, you know, I got away from and I went back to it is when we take BP, you know, we've got cones set up for oppo and this and that. And I had done this early in my career, set up cones down third base and first base line to bunt to the cone. That wears me out. Guy, oh, man, I made a hell of a bunt. It was just this much foul. It's foul. You know,
but that thing. We used to keep points. We'd set up cones and buckets.
Yeah. And so I got away from that in the middle of my career for about 5 or 6. I'm like, hell, I don't know why I did. And man, we're back when cones are set up every day. When you bunt to the cone, you know, you can't do anything without a target. And so kids learn to do that.
Yeah, that's that external focus. Just like with hitting, if you give them external things to focus on for bunting too, where you're trying to get in this area, it cleans a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
It cleans a lot of it up. Yeah. Do you have a fail forward moment? Do you have something? Do you have a fail forward moment? Something you thought was going to set you back, but looking back now, it helped you move forward?
No, not really. Not really. We've been pretty blessed. I tell you there in the, you know, we've had a lot of success and we've been so close. I've been to Grand Junction 6 times, but we've been so close so many other times. My gosh, there's been some heartbreak in that. And, you just, you know how it is for a month. You just feel like you had a death in the family. And, we've come in second in our regional so many times. In 96, I tell you, we had a very good club, and that still haunts. We had to go to Meridian and play 2 out of 3. We won on Friday, then they won the next 2. All 3 were close games. They had a great club. They got beat in the finals for the World Series at Grand Junction on Saturday night in the bottom of the 10th. I mean, they had a good club.
It's hard to win in Grand Junction. That bracket is wild.
Yeah.
It's a wild bracket in Grand Junction.
Yeah, and we haven't had great success out there, but I'm at peace with everything that I've done, and we're not done. You know, I have just as much fight and burn as I had 20 years ago, maybe more. And I'm going to do this as long as I can. The good Lord's blessed me with health, and I'll be 63 in May.
You don't
I still try to tell myself because I
don't look it either. But what are some of your life hacks? Not hacks, but routines. Do you have anything that you do every day? Because you are, I mean, you're in great shape. So.
Well, you know, I stay active. In the wintertime, I get in the weight room a little bit. During season, I don't. I don't have time, but I'm out and I'm active all the time.
Like when you look at the longevity studies, strength training is the best one for people.
I get on the elliptical a lot in the wintertime. I used to run a little bit, but you know, the elliptical don't make your knees and your back hurt.
I am not a runner, man. My wife runs every morning.
So I get on the elliptical and, you know, I drink, people laugh. I drink unsweet tea 24/7. I don't drink coffee. I make fun of people who drink sweet tea. And I just drink unsweet tea out of convenience. You don't have to put anything in it. And,
well, sugar's another one too. Like,
yeah, I have no sugar in it.
No sugar.
And, so maybe that's the deal. I've got an old country doctor over here. You know, I can go in and out at any time, and he makes me have a physical once a year and takes my blood. And
I just had my dad this week. My levels are all good. So
yeah, so
I get to keep doing what I'm doing. Nutrition's a big one for me. I think that's.
I've been blessed with good health. I really have. And most days, this doesn't seem like work. You know, obviously, you've been there. Stuff you do on campus a lot of times is work, but you get to the field, it's not work. So, and I, like I said, we've got a good administration here and good people. This thing, I always tell people, once you get here, when you first get here, like, once you get here, guys cry when they leave, you know.
It's about the people. It's always about the people.
There's some magic here.
It's about the people.
And that's easy for me to sell. Some people think, he's nuts trying to get me to come to that little podunk town. And, you know, we're an hour from Tulsa and we're right on I-40. We're 15 minutes from Muskogee. So We got everything we need.
You know, you talked about playoffs. How do you manage your emotions as a coach?
Well, I hope I've gotten better at that. Man, I still get sick at my stomach. I do.
I love the butterflies. Like, yeah. And that's where you talk about the visualization piece. Like, you need that to perform. So, like, I was like, okay, yeah, I got it every morning. I got butterflies before every game.
Yeah. Yeah, I still nerves and stuff. I try to just approach – we try to keep everything normal. And I think that's where you get the deal of – like I said, it doesn't matter if you're playing the Yankees or the Bad News Bears. It's the same routine. I'm big on routines. And you need to do the same thing. That's how you're even keeled. That's one thing I'm always the most – I tell our guys, one thing we want to try to do is peg it every day. You know, we want to – and that's hard, but it's possible because that's mind and heart, you know. And we talk about, like, play a three-game series. If we – like, for instance, we played Friday. We got a doubleheader on Saturday, a 7 and a 9. Those are long days. Mentally, physically, but it's a mindset. You're going to decide if you're tired or not. And we talk about that. I always talk about that stuff beforehand. Always have. And then I, you know, it's like getting up early. Sometimes going places, guys. Well, hey, now wait a minute. There's somebody right now at 6 a.m. in the morning doing surgery on a heart. Come on, get over yourself. Or guys are bitching and moaning about this. Hey. There's somebody in a foxhole in Iraq right now. He hadn't had a hot meal in a month. Come on.
I interviewed somebody from the Marines, Captain Getz, who actually pitched at Princeton, but he was a tank officer. And so I asked him, I'm like, what's the hottest day you ever had? He goes, well, we had some 100 where you'd take the temp inside the tank, 150 degrees inside that tank, 140, 150 degrees inside the tank.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Well, that's why we talk about D-Day. I mean, kids don't know, you know, people, to me, you should study history to learn and not go back and not make those mistakes. And, you know, if you read history, really read about D-Day, about those guys in those troop carriers and, you know, somebody dying, being shot and that they couldn't fall over because, and then the door opens.
Saving Private Ryan.
Just great. And movie. See, we talk about that in breathing. One of the great things that he did in that is when he's got the soldier in the helmet and he's panting. And there's the term choking. You're so scared you forget to breathe. Those guys are scared. Yeah. When I saw that, that went right to the breathing. We talk about that. Our first, when we start talking about breathing in Champions Class, that's what I bring up is watch that. Yeah, that helmet, that guy.
It's a bad place to be, fight or flight.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
What are some final thoughts before I let you go?
Well, thank you for this. I really enjoyed this. I like talking baseball. I've tried to give back, and I try to tell young coaches, man, get out and go to practice and don't get something from everybody. You know, all this time, you try to learn different ways to teach because what I know doesn't matter. It's what my players know. And everybody's different. So I'm always fascinated at learning. I'm pretty regimented on what I believe, but there's different ways to teach it and do stuff. And that's, I'm always looking for a better way to teach it and to make us better and myself better. So
thanks for your time, Coach. Hopefully I get a chance to see you in Grand Junction. I'm actually going this year. So hopefully I get
okay.
A chance to see
well,
you. Okay.
Well, I look forward to it. Not to do this anytime. If you ever want to just call and just talk baseball.
For sure. For sure.
Call me. It's
I'm
been
happy
great
for you, man. This is awesome. So if you talk to Coach Ward and Coach Gutton, tell him I said, hey, Coach Gutton is one of my favorites. Shout out to Coach Gutton his last season. He meant a lot to me as a young coach. I've always Coach Gutton is one of my favorites. One of my favorite human beings in the world. I just like the way that he handled things. You talk about differences. You know, you see that my dad and Coach Gutton are so different in a lot of ways. Coach Gutton was always so low pulsed.
Yeah.
I always respected the way that Coach Gutton handled in-game management because just nothing ever bothered him and his team's always played that way. And I'm a huge fan of Coach Gutton's.
Yeah. Well, that's great. That's great. Well, thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Finish strong here.
All right. We're planning on it. Take care, Ryan.
You see why Coach Keith's won so many games? He's dedicated a life of service to his players and has a growth mindset. Good luck to him and the Cowboys the rest of the way out. Thanks again to John Litchfield, Jim Richardson, Zach Hale, Matt West, and Antonio Walker in the ABC office for all the help on the podcast. Feel free to reach out to me via email, rbrownlee@abca.org, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at CoachB_ABCA, or direct message me via the MyABCA app. This is Ryan Brownlee signing off for the American Baseball Coaches Association. Thanks, and leave it better for those behind you.
Another day.